Blog Talk Radio.
Rah. Killer Mike Bamboo. You already know. Yeah. No surprise, I'm from a gangbang culture, but we can keep it civil or pull a thang-thang on ya. Southern California where the sun don't quit, intergenerational gang so sons don't quit. But immediately you see that the problems that's in my city are secondary to what's propelling it in my city. I mean really break it down, take poor black and brown, educate them poor, take the jobs from out the town, then inundate them with the date of drugs and dumb TV, locked into a zoo and hunted daily by the police. Then you get a group of youth who know they don't belong, then they gather up and organize a number up strong. But see, the failure isn't seeing that the problem ain't the gang, it's the situation in the communities where we hang. So I'm so pro-gang, it might scare a motherfucker, cause I fix the misconception that the enemies are brothers.
Bang on the setup, bang on the setup, bang on the setup, upset the setup, bang on the setup, bang on the setup, bang on the setup, homie, we been set up.
I tell them, I went from a street gang thing, then I joined a military fleet marine force thing. From a little bitty gang in the south of Los Angeles to dragging bodies out of their house to help a government who hell bent on keeping money spent on the missile. The reality's the difference between them shits is little. We had the objective of arming up over money, and they had the objective of arming up over money. And we told kids join us, we the truth. Lies about protecting our black to get recruits. Then we found that we getting killed for a hood, and we don't own a single speck of dirt on that hood. Whether in a zone down south in Decatur, or in a flatlands off of Lenox and La Brea, or in a low-rise project in Chicago, big money come in and buy up our body.
So your sets up, we about to upset the setup. We about to upset the setup. Up to upset the setup. Throw your sets up, we about to upset the setup. Upset the setup. Up to upset the setup.
I do it for the Crips and the Blooders. BGF brothers, the real freeway Ricky Ross and Chris Dutters. I do my thing for Hoover, I represent for Force. So my folk and my people, so they set to support. Support me to Matthew, she might say the shot. So maybe next summer, no mama's gotta cry. Cause maybe next summer, nobody gotta die. Hell, even if we fail, somebody gotta try. The only way the system rule is somebody gotta lie. And the lie they told is old, they base it on your race. They separate you black, you brown, you yellow, and white face. Then we further separate by joining gangs and legislate. That our neighborhoods are now at war like we are separate states. So the police occupy our hood to keep down all the drama. So the Starbucks they just built is comfortable for soccer mama. And American Apparel comfortable for all the hipsters. And it's zero tolerance for all you spicks and you niggas and you chinks and you crackers. And it ain't about who's whiter and it ain't about who's blacker, but the money is a factor. And the factor is the factories got moved up out the hood. When starvation is present and absent is a job, a man with simple thought, or he will form a mob. If you should form a mafia, then you should think civilian. Buy the hood for real. Every block, every building, every build, every build. Feed the chill, feed the chill. Gang bang, gang bang. Build, build. Feed the chill, feed the chill. Feed the chill, feed the chill. Gang bang, gang bang. On the system, on the system.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. The struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over.
Mr. Jackson,
sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see to that.
Get him where it hurts.
Starring Gary Dorden from TV CSI.
This is the military day.
Free the land, revolutionary greetings. Welcome to another edition of Georgia Emerson Radio. On your host, Blue Money Secure, where our goal is a fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transfer the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in rebuilding and stabilization of new African community. Our fifth goal is to prepare a new African prisoner for release, reducing new African citizenism. Our overall goal and transferring the entire pre-industrial slave complex to big interest learning in the world through educational means by transferring the mind state of an individual. So they transfer the mind state of the particular environment, society, family, or nation, wherever it may be. Before I bring on our guest tonight, I'd go over some events that happened in history during this week. On March 12th, 1932, Andrew Young, the first new African to serve as the chief delegate of the United Nations, was born. In 1945, the first state fair employment practices law signed by the New York governor. In 1955, saxophonist Charlie Bird Parker won the finals of the modern jazz movement down in New York City at the age of 34. In 1956, congressmen from 11 southern states issued the Southern Manifesto declaring opposition to the Supreme Court Brown versus Board of Education decision, creating race discrimination, segregation, and public schools. In 1964, Malcolm X resigned for the Nation of Islam. In 1976, George Jackson Brigade member Mark Cook was captured. On March 13, 1862, Congress changed the military code and forbade Union officers and troops to aid in the capture and return of fugitive slaves in what one historian called the military slave hunt. 1856, Jefferson Davis signed a bill authorizing use of slaves as soldiers in the Confederate Army. In 1946, Colonel Benjamin O. Davis, Jr. assumed command of the Lockburn Air Force Base, Ohio. In 1970, Senate extended the Voting Rights Act of 1965 to 1975. In 1979, Madison and Granada overthrown Eric Gary and established People's Revolutionary Government. In 2020, in Louisville, Kentucky, police fatally shot Breonna Taylor. On March 14, 1794, Eli Whitney patented cotton gin that made cotton king and increased demand for slave labor. In 1780, the African challenged taxation without representation. 1835, Missouri required free new African people to apply for a license in order to continue residing in the state. In 1973, North Carolina Prison Union was formed. On March 15, 1897, the 55th Congress convened. The first new African Congress, George H. White of North Carolina. In 1901, Bailey Crutchfield, a new African woman, is lynched in Tennessee by a white mob that were looking for her brother. In 1933, the NAACP began coordinated attack on segregation and discrimination, filing a suit against the University of North Carolina on behalf of Tommy Hoku. Case was lost on a technicality after the president of a new African college refused to certify the records of the plaintiff. In 1947, John W. Lee became the first new African Navy officer. Also, March 15, the International Day Against Police Brutality. On March 16, 1792, Denmark became the first Western country to outlaw the slave trade. In 1827, the first new African newspaper, the Freedman Journal, was published in New York City by Samuel E. Cornish and John Rusworm. In 1870, Around R. Rebels made his first speech in the Senate, opposing the readmission of Georgia without adequate safeguard for new African citizens. It was the first official speech by a new African in Congress. 1903, Ernest Lynn, Methodist minister, and educator from Maryland, was named Minister of the Liberia on March 17, 1806. Norbert Rayleigh, engineer and scientist, was born. 1851, Samuel Cartwright, a Southern physician, claimed a disease called Drapetomania makes New African people want to run from slavery and describe whipping and amputation as a treatment. 1886, the Carrollton Massacre occurred in Carrollton, Mississippi. 20 New Africans were killed. In 1992, escaped Puerto Rican political prisoner Luis Colon Otteri is recaptured. On March 18, 1877, President Hayes appointed Frederick Douglass, Marshal of the District of Columbia, the first major federal position in the United States given to a new African. In 1879, 46th Congress, like 1879-1881, convened. One U.S. Senator, Blanche A. K. Bruce of Mississippi. In 1909, President Roosevelt appointed a committee, including Emmett J. Schmidt Scott, to investigate disturbances in Liberia. In 1933, Eunice Blackwell born, organized for SNCC and other civil rights organizations, helped to find Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party and the Mississippi Action for Community Education. In 1935, Mama Dr. Frances Quest Webster, noted scholar and griot, wrote that white supremacists were practiced by white men and consciously and unconsciously to ensure the genetic survival born. 1947, Louis Lattier, the first new African journalist to be given Senate Press Gallery accreditation. Now, those are events happening in history during this week. You know, but the show must go on. You know, I'll say long live New African Independent Movement, free all political prisoners, and catch New African citizens. And I'd like to welcome to the show tonight, Sister Coco Thompson. How you doing? Free the land.
Free the land.
How you doing tonight?
Necessary. All right, not bad. I appreciate you having me on tonight.
Okay, no doubt. First, I thank you for coming to our broadcast, sharing out your understanding. And thank you for the work you did in the past, present, and the future, right? Before we get into it, tell the people about yourself. Who are you? Tell the people about yourself so they can get an understanding of who exactly I'm talking to and what's going on.
Indeed. I don't know where to start, but so I guess I could say that I'm an organizer. I primarily organize in resistance. Forgive me one second. So I primarily organize in resistance to a lot of the structural violence that exists in this country. And through that, I organize as a new African, conscious new African citizen in support of the work that the Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa is doing. In addition to that, I am also an organizer with Community Movement Builders and Black Alliance for Peace, organizations that are local, Community Movement Builders, which is a local organization, and Black Alliance for Peace, which organizes around various issues such as militarization and international issues around the African diaspora. I'm also a mother, so primarily I spend most of my time taking care of my son and just trying to raise him in the best way I know possible. Majority of the work that I have engaged in has been a long history of activism and, you know, work in various types of communities, beginning with on-campus activism that I was engaged in college, back when I was in college not too long ago. And from there, I started working supporting a lot of prisoner resistance campaigns, more specifically New African prisoner resistance campaigns and freedom campaigns. And so I spent quite a while in support, and I continue to, you know, do certain levels of work in support in that area as well. So I come from a background of you know, a lot of different organizing skills and work.
Okay. Okay. I appreciate that. You know, I read your bio, it says you're a class conscious New African citizen worker, right? What do you mean by class conscious? What does it actually mean? You know, I know using people hear certain things. They think about class, Marxism, and the different system in India and things of that nature. What do you mean by class conscious? What do you mean by that? What's your understanding behind that?
So, yeah, so I don't consider myself a Marxist. However, I do believe that the present struggle that exists for us as African people, New Africans, is specifically a class issue. And so although the struggle is to free all African people and on the continent as well as globally as the Pan-African struggle, as we might know it, but more specifically, to be class conscious is to understand that there is a specific class division amongst us as well. And so when I consider myself someone who organizes with a perspective of scientific socialism and, you know, understanding that history of socialism that comes from the continent of Africa and thinking about how us as Africans can work together in a more cooperative and functional way that does not create more class issues amongst us. So when I think about what it means for us to build a nation, I think about us as African people working together to build a nation that is just, right? I feel like that, you know, we don't currently live in a world that has any form of real justice, and thinking about what it means to be just and creating a system that's built on that as well is very important. And that would mean for us to struggle against class division. And, you know, like I said, you know, just because we are all African people in struggle together does not mean that class is not something that we have to, you know, struggle with amongst ourselves. Historically, you know, in African nations who have gained independence, you know, throughout that history, you know, you would see that there is some type of class struggle that exists even after independence. And so because of that, I feel like, you know, the petty bourgeoisie and, you know, the intellectual class, and there's various classes of people amongst us that we would have to really understand how to overcome that. And so that's a part of the work that I engage in.
Okay. That's understood. You all mentioned contradiction, so I understand that it's contradiction. You identify a New African citizen worker, right? What did it actually mean to the layman or laywoman who just hearing this term? What did it actually mean? What's the understanding behind that?
So as a New African, anybody can, you know, say that they're a New African, right? Because there is a history. If we understand what it means to be New African, there is a history of struggle as New Africans collectively, as we have, you know, been forced here onto this continent through enslavement. And so as anybody can consider themselves a New African, as well as other people can also declare citizenship within the Republic of New Africa. And so as someone I have personally declared citizenship, in recognizing that I am a New African and I am in struggle for land and independence within this plebiscite of, within the Republic of New Africa itself. And so because of myself, I consider myself a citizen, a conscious citizen at that. I'm not just a citizen. I'm a conscious citizen. I consciously know that I'm a citizen. But I feel like that's also not just enough, right? I feel like, you know, if I'm thinking about what it means for us to build political power as a nation, we have to put in the work, right? And so, you know, if as workers, as people who are contributing to building a nation, we are workers, right? And so that is what the worker part means. And so that's my contribution to building a nation within the Republic of New Africa as a conscious citizen worker, and specifically in support of the provisional government.
Okay. You know, you mentioned the term New African, right? What exactly is a New African, and what prepared?
Free the land? You cut off?
Okay, free the land. Nah, my bad. I was talking, and I guess it was on mute. What I was saying is that I heard you use the term New African. What exactly does this term mean? And also, what was the starting point of your life or catalyst that pushed you or encouraged you to become a new African, declare a new African citizenship?
So historically, a new African is any person who is descendant of an enslaved person here on this continent. That's historically. And for me, when I define New African in contemporary terms, when I look at what is New African today, our Black people in America are New Africans. And so a lot of times there's this technicality that exists amongst like who is a New African, and I think there's a lot of confusion around that. But for me, I feel like anyone can be a New African if they decide that they want to join the struggle. However, if you know, as people have come here, have been forced here, there are various reasons why African people are here on this continent, right? And so whether you are in the Caribbean or whether you are here on this continent very specifically, but whatever brought you here into the Americas, and specifically here in the United States, where we are struggling for land and independence, I would say that any Black person in America is a New African, whether they consciously believe so or not. And for me, I remember actually, you know, in my early politicized days back when I was in college, I took out the book ASADA. And I was taking classes at City College, and right across the street from where ASADA was, you know, writing about in the book, right? And it was very interesting, you know, to hear about ASADA and then read ASADA. And so I never really knew, or I never really grasped, I guess, that part where she, you know, talks about joining the New African Independence Movement and struggle. And so, you know, a few years later, I started getting involved with, you know, prisoners' resistance, and I was introduced to the term New African in a very, I guess, overt way, right? So I got involved in a campaign that is called Mend the 13th, and that was in collaboration with Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, an initiative that I had got involved with. And that was actually the first time that I was introduced to what it meant to build infrastructure. And what it meant to build infrastructure as New Africans. I had never really knew about it, but it was just something that I was introduced to. And as I started working with other comrades who were incarcerated, new African comrades who were incarcerated, I started to learn what it meant to, as a nation, right? So the nationhood part started to come into an understanding. I had an understanding of what it meant to be a nationalist. And then I started to learn about the provisional government and started to learn a little bit more about what it meant to engage in this type of work. And again, thinking about infrastructure, building infrastructure, but then also other aspects such as governance and whatnot. So that's how I was introduced.
Okay. Okay. Tell a little bit more about the organization you're talking about, JL Lawyer Speak and Amendment 13. What are some of their objectives or purposes? What are the purposes of these two organizations? And a brief summary, what are the purposes of these two organizations?
So Jailhouse Lawyers Speak is a prisoner-led organization that's led by prisoners inside. And pretty much this organization is engaged in several initiatives that help to support prisoners in various efforts, such as gaining their jailhouse lawyers certifications. And so they also support, they have a toy drive for holidays, and they are engaged in specific resistance struggles. As far as, let's say, they had a prisoner strike that happened from, I remember it was 2018, if I'm not mistaken. And so throughout the years, they have various campaigns in which they engage in some form of resistance. And so that is how some of the work that I was involved in as far as supporting them on the outside. Now, Amanda 13.
Hey.
Amanda 13th is a campaign, and so basically Amanda 13th, right? But however, it's not necessarily that, right? It's not as, I guess you can say, it's not built for the political system itself, right? It's really in a way where it's to develop, again, infrastructure within our communities. And so, you know, several comrades who are incarcerated developed a lot of the blueprint, I guess you can say, as to what it looks like, it could look like for us to actually go into our communities and think about things like building a garden or, you know, I believe there's also, what is that? Let's say after hurricane emergency preparedness, and there's also various other programs, right, that they have thought of in ways to respond to the issues that new Africans are experiencing in their communities. And so for folks that do get involved, a large part is to, you know, think and strategize on ways to bring this to our communities and bring this type of infrastructure. Another campaign that they had was for our elders, and so who are incarcerated and obviously have been incarcerated for quite a while. And in this campaign, they're working hard to release elders who have obviously been doing the work to help again, like I said, the autonomous infrastructure mission, which is the infrastructure that they're developing, is something that, you know, we need our elders on the outside. And so basically, you know, when thinking about that and the importance of that, so demanding strategic release, I'm not too sure if they've have updated it, but I know demand strategic release was the campaign to release our elders because they're much needed on the outside. So that was a campaign that they had going.
Okay. Okay. That's understandable. The elders you're talking about, the elders are these conscious new African citizens, catching new African citizens, the elders you're talking about that you mentioned? Okay. That's good. In regard to your work as a conscious citizen worker, right, how does it relate with your work as an organizer with community movement builders and the Black Alliance for Peace? And also, what are the end games of both of your organizations? What did they actually do for the people who are listening?
So, yeah, so like I said earlier, nation building is it's a priority in my life, right? And so the work that I do is to nation build. And so community movement builders is some form of that, I guess you can say. And so when thinking about community movement builders, what they are trying to do is develop a liberated zone in a specific neighborhood in Atlanta, which is called Pittsburgh. And so by bringing specific forms of infrastructure and very specific organizing that they do with the community, it's to help, again, to empower the community to develop their own liberated zone so that they can be self-sufficient. And so in that regard, when you think about what it means to nation build, right, it's to build our people, right? And so that is the work of community movement builders, is to build communities and through the, you know, specific initiatives, campaigns, and work that they're engaged in. So, you know, they have a distribution program where they distribute groceries and hygiene products to local members of the community, which helps to support, you know, members so that they're not worried about how they're going to get their next meal, and they can, you know, appropriately put their funds to other things, which is, again, like, you know, once we get to that place where housing and, you know, all of these other necessities can be overcome. But in the meantime, you know, building relationships and helping to support community members is a large part of that, as well as future plans that they have is, you know, for developing housing for organizers as well as for community members so that they can have affordable housing within that community. So that's some of the work that Community Movement Builders does, and I, you know, offer, you know, support in other in specific areas such as people. And the Black Alliance for Peace is, you know, is so the work that Black Alliance for Peace does is very connected to a lot of the politics that exists in this country, right? And resisting, you know, specific policy and resisting specific areas of problem that affect new Africans throughout the country. Specifically, if we think about the 1033 program and, you know, heightened militarization that is happening, AFRICOM, which are the bases that are within the African continent. They do a lot of diplomatic work throughout various nations, within the diaspora. And so there's a lot of initiatives in Latin America. They have various teams. So they have teams that, you know, are the Haiti Americas team. They have the Africa team. And they also have various, you know, research, political education team, which I'm a part of, which is to to, you know, think strategically on how to train and to develop any organizers or members that are within the Black Alliance for Peace. And so, again, this all ties into nation building. And there is a very important, you know, role that all these organizations can play when it comes down to how we nation build collectively, because this is it's a large struggle, right? And so we need to really think about how we can bridge a lot of this work and bridge it together. And I think that's a lot of what I'm doing, is trying to bridge these various areas of the work together. And again, for nation building.
Okay. You know, you made this sound very interesting previously in your conversation about resisting the politics of America, right? Why would one resist the politics of America? Why would one do that?
Well, it's not. I mean, if we know the history of this country, as New Africans, you know, we, you know, we're so-called emancipated, and I think that's a really misleading idea, right? That we are now citizens of the United States. When you think a lot about what it means to be a citizen, if you think about what it means to have rights and constitutional rights in the United States, as we can see, you know, through the policing and through incarceration, very specifically, we are going to see that we are not necessarily the same. We don't have the same type of citizenship as those who are European. And that's just,
okay.
I mean, that's just a historical fact, because when you think about, if you actually study and research the Emancipation Proclamation and you study a lot of the historical documents that New Africans have put together, and showing these discrepancies, then you get a better understanding about why, you know, these laws do not serve us, why there is no justice when the police murder our people, why our people are incarcerated and don't have a chance when they stand trial, right, and all of these other nuances that exist. And so, you know, it's important for us to, you know, think about various ways to resist the system itself, right? And, you know, I'm not a reformist, so I don't advocate for reform, and I think that it's very important to understand the difference between reform, right, and what it means to actually engage in revolutionary struggle. And so I think that when we think about resistance to American, a U.S. policy, whether it's domestic or global, you know, we have to remember that if we don't resist, it's just going to continue to these contradictions are going to continue to heighten, right? And so when we think about colonialism and neocolonialism and neoliberalism, that kind of, you know, these issues, and fascism, which has always been here but is becoming a little bit more popular, I guess you can say, then we have to recognize that there is no room to reform anything, and resistance is the only option that we have.
Okay. I appreciate that. You know, by understanding this New African Women History Month, right? Who are five New African women? At current, maybe an ancestor, maybe currently still among us, that influence you, and why, in the work that you do, or inspire you in any kind of way.
Oh, that's a tough question. Let me make sure that I have my five. So one person who has inspired me tremendously is Mama Safia Bukhari, who is a new African woman, new African revolutionary, and someone who fought constantly for our people. And so that's someone that I would never forget to mention. There are other people such as, you know, Mama Asada Shakur. There is, let me think, you have Queen Mother Moore, who is one of the founding New Africans of the, who signed the Declaration of Independence early on. And so I mentioned three, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so who else do I have? Let me get... you do have historical women who would, I would say, Mama Betty Shabazz, who was, again, at the Declaration of the original Declaration of Independence signing. And then you have others. I know Fulani Sunni Ali. Let's see who else. I know I named five, but I feel like I could give more.
Okay.
But yeah, so I mean, just continuing on from there, I would just say that, you know, for me that there are so many New African women who have been in struggle, many that we may not have, we may not be able to, you know, or many may not know or think of as New African sisters who are even currently doing the work, and those are historical women. But if we think about Mama Afia and Mwanganza, we have Mama Ayo, who is the first vice president of the provisional government, Sister Sa Ma'at, who is president of the provisional government, who has inspired me as well. And then Mama Nkechi Saifa, another inspiration that, you know, she has worked really hard on reparations struggle, and, you know, and as a lawyer, and, you know, and a lot of these women who have been in struggle, New African women who have been in struggle, a lot of the work that they have done and contributed to nation building is really important to remember.
Okay. You know, I understand that you you confront contemporary contradictions, right? From a revolutionary African national and pan African perspective, right? What does that mean? What did it mean by me saying that? What does that actually mean? That you confront contemporary contradictions. What are those in general? And also, you say you deal with it from a new revolution, new African, nationally and pan African perspective. What do those things mean for the ones who are listening?
Yeah. So I mean, there's a contradiction in everything, right? And so I feel like for me, I never really thought about that before. And a few years ago, actually reading Mama Safia Bukhari, she kind of is the person who taught me about what it means to really confront contradictions, right? To really think about specific contradictions that exist within our movement, and then everyday life, right?
Yeah.
And so when we think about it, right, what is the type of work that we're trying to do? What are we struggling for? Right? And so what are the things that are also getting in the way of that struggle, right, or propelling our movements forward? And so a lot of times in my own practice, everything that I do, I'm considering these contradictions, right? I consider, you know, the things that work, that don't work. And okay. Sometimes you have to have a little compromise, right? But for me, contradiction, you know, they exist in all things. And if we're thinking about ways to confront these contradictions and contemporary contradictions, you know, we have to think about what it means to engage with police, right? That's a huge contradiction, right? If we're thinking about, you know, all of the people that are murdered by the police, and then let's say you start dating a police officer, right? That's a contradiction if you're fighting for, if you're resisting the system, right? And so, like, that's just a little example that I could, you know, I'm just saying, right? And so when I think about, you know, the work that I engage in or my everyday life, I'm just constantly, you know, struggling against these contradictions so that I could be a stronger, much stronger, much more intentional organizer. And I think that's just something that has helped me, right, to ground me in the work that I do. Because, you know, if you have, you know, if you have a set of principles and values that you believe in, you know, there are going to be contradictions to those principles and values. And that kind of helps to guide you, right, to, you know, to keep you on the path rather than falling off, right? And so I think it's really easy to want to give up, right? I think every day I say, I'm done, right? And I don't mean it, because I'm like, nah, I can't be done. I'm not done, right? But there's so many frustrations that exist, and I think these contradictions, you know, are you know, some frustrations. But then it would be a contradiction if I gave up. So it's just, that's just how I think. You know, it's just something that I'm constantly working through, and then it's like, again, you know, I could work through it by myself, but I feel like we have to work through it together as a collective. And so I think that's something that I feel like may not be so present, right? And I think what really helps me I always say this, I always talk about these as principles. What is that word for feedback is? Criticism, self-criticism and self-criticism, right? And I think that's something that is sincerely lacking, right? Where we can really confront a lot of the things that we are doing that's not helping us, right? If we can confront a lot of things that work against our progress, that we're trying to, anything that we're trying to achieve. And so for me, because I'm self-critical in a lot of ways, I'm able to really like work through contradictions because I'm constantly trying to be a better self. And I think that's something that I would like to kind of bring that out of other people, right, and help develop other people to really focus on these things so that we can, again, get better, right, because I feel like we're all in this rebuild phase, right, like there's been a lot of, I guess, issues within our movements, you know, a lot of, and I blame the state for that, right, that's COINTELPRO, right, like that has created a lot of issues, throughout our movement, right? And I think that's just something that we have to work on together to overcome. And, you know, there'll always be new contradictions after you overcome other contradictions, right? Like that's how contradictions work, is a constant motion, a constant movement towards something better, right? And just because we might, you know, see change in a specific way today does not mean that that change, once we get there, won't be a contradiction toward the next level of change that we're trying to get at. And so that's just how contradictions work, from what I understand.
Okay. How important is it for people to be involved in political education, or what kind of role does political education play in regards to freedom of political prisoner, new apparition and nationalism, black liberation, passing out? What kind of role does political education play in all those particular ideologies and particular movements and particular situations and conditions? And how important is political education in general for one to obtain?
Oh, I mean, it's critical. It's crucial. It's everything that I'm about, right? If I didn't engage in some form of political education, I don't think I would be here today, right? Like, I don't come from, like, you know, just because I went to college doesn't mean I have a degree, right? And just because I went to college doesn't mean I didn't come from something before that, right? Because I lived a whole life before I went to college, right? I was a lot older when I started college. And so when I think about education, right, I didn't have, you know, an education prior to college where I understood what my circumstance was, right? I lived a life of struggle, right? Like, and not in struggle, but I lived a life of struggle, right? And, you know, whether it was from the streets, I've been on my own since I was 15, and I experienced some, you know, I've experienced a lot. I'll just say that, right? And I didn't have any type of understanding, right? I didn't have no type of understanding of what it meant to participate in any type of political, anything political, right? I just didn't know anything about it. I had a job and, you know, I went about my everyday life. I was unconscious, I guess you can say. I had some type of consciousness, but it wasn't like I understood what it meant, right? Like, I didn't like the pigs, right? I didn't fuck with them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, right, why didn't I mess with them, right? Like, why did I have so many problems with the police, right? Why did the police do this to me and do this to those people over there, right? And so I always think about what it meant to finally become educated, right? And I went to a college, specifically I went to Medgar Evers College in Brooklyn. And, you know, I intentionally went to this college, right? I didn't have many options now. I had the option of Medgar Evers College in Brooklyn or Bronx Community College, right? It was the two colleges that I got accepted to. And, you know, and I said, you know what? If I stay here in the Bronx, like, I'm not going to get out. I'm not going to be able to escape anything that I already know. So I go to this college, and it has a very interesting history, this college, right? Mama Betty Shabazz, she worked at that college. She was a professor at the college, right? And a lot of people have gone through this college, right, that, you know, and it was obviously named after Medgar Evers. And the college itself has a history of resistance, right, because it was developed in resistance. And so when I first got to this college, again, I'm just like some regular person who decided in the middle of her life that she was going to go to school. And there was a dean that sat me down, and he decided he was going to mentor me. I was in the English department, and I didn't know how to read, write. I didn't have none of these skills, really, you know. And I'm math and science, forget about it. Like, I'm not, you know, but I had a little bit I had a little bit of potential, I guess you can say. And so this dean sat me down, and he had me reading, and he wanted me to really read the words that were on. And he was like, nah, you're not reading it correctly. And so then he started, and so what he was teaching me, though, was our history, right? The history of Black people in America, right? And, you know, you always hear, you know, I used to go down south. My grandfather, he was from the south, Virginia at least. Some people don't consider that the south, but so I used to go to Virginia every summer. And racism in Virginia is different from racism in New York, right? Not to say that New York don't have racism, because it does, but it's a different type of racism, right? Mostly the Italians and Irish people are the people who are probably racist to you, and then you have the South, which is a little different, right? And I feel like, you know, I just didn't really know a lot. And he really, like, put it in me and gave me some type of fire and spark, right, to really think about our history. And then as I started to engage in those histories, right, I started to get involved with the student newspaper. And that is what introduced me to more political activism. But again, like I said, you know, when I think about political education, right, it's these moments, right, these little things that can spark some type of political activity inside of an individual, right? And so I was on this campus, and other, you know, students were, again, also had that type of fire inside of them, you know, and we worked, you know, we were very active on campus trying to resist a lot of the neoliberalism that was on campus. And, you know, and then fast forward, you know, with all of the work that I've done, prior to me getting involved in, you know, New African resistance movements and independence movements, when I think about, you know, going out in the streets and protesting, you know, I was very involved in that in New York, involved in that organizing, a lot of the protests, you know, after Trayvon Martin and Mike Brown and Eric Garner, like, I did a lot of that. But there was nothing else after that, right? I had college, and college kind of was just, like, teaching me things. I was, you know, studying, you know, politics in school, but I've, you know, you learn a lot of politics, but you're not really, you know, I learned a lot of political theory, right? And so, you know, when I'm fast forwarding into the work that I'm doing now, you know, a lot of the political theory is what helps me to do the work, right? And so it's really important when I think about how, like, political education and education period, but political education, right, how it helps to really guide the work and to really put into perspective the type of work that we need to engage in. And so it's really important not only for us to develop ourselves politically, but even really kind of even maybe even restructure the understanding of what it means to be politically educated, right? Because I think a lot of times, and this is maybe a criticism that I have, when I think about people who are trying to engage in political study, right? And I'm not saying that this is wrong. I'm just saying that a lot of times we're identifying the problem, right? We know capitalism is the problem. We know white supremacy is a problem. We know policing, mass incarceration are problems. We know these are issues, and we continue to study the issue. But we're already experiencing the issue. We already, like, it's a part of our everyday life. So when I'm, so my criticism is, what I would like to see more of is us to really engage in what it means to build political power, right? And so I think political education should also really help us to develop, you know, a really good politic, but also how do we organize that politic? And I think that's also a part of it, right? Like, how do we organize ourselves politically and really think about not just the issue, right, but the actual work itself of being organized politically and educating ourselves to understanding political systems as well, right? Because I think that there's a lot of misunderstanding when it comes down to the function of society and its politics itself, right? And then how do we reorganize that as New Africans thinking about what it means to build a nation? So I think that's just something that I think of, if that's clear.
Yes, it's understandable. I want to ask you one more question before I open the line up for the callers, right? I heard you mention Mama Side Security Night earlier, right? And I want to ask you, how important is it that she remain a political exile? How important is it that she remain a political exile? What are your thoughts on that?
Forgive me. You're saying how important is it for her to remain in political exile?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, that's extremely important. She's not safe, right? If she came back, right? And that's just a fact. Like, we have not been successful, right, and freeing Mama Sada Shakur from exile, right? And so I think that's a very important aspect of recognizing and understanding that she has not been freed from any type of political repression. And obviously the bounty that is on her would prevent her from, you know, from emerging, right, and from that exile. And I think it's up to us to acknowledge that and to respect that. You know, because there has been a lot of work and retaliation for her release, right, for her liberation, I guess you can say. A lot of people have been incarcerated because of the fact that she was liberated. And so all of that work and sacrifice for her to not remain in exile, I feel like we're kind of, and for the fact that she has not yet been freed, and I think we have to remember that she is still a prisoner of war, even though she's not held captive here, she is still a captive because she was never released. And so she has to remain safe in exile because that's the only option at this moment.
Okay, I appreciate it. Yeah, I want to thank you for coming to our broadcast. She's another one standing. Thank you for working your path in the present and the future. Now, at this time, by the opening of the lines, if you have any question, comments, or statement, please press one at a time. If you have any question, comment, or statement, please press one at a time. Open your line up. Okay, I see a caller. 901-609, your line is open. If you have any question, comment, statement, please press one at a time. Your line is open. 901-609. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I had myself muted. Freeland, how y'all doing tonight? Freeland,
I mean, yes, sir. I'm strong.
Freeland, always a pleasure to hear you speak. You are very well versed in this political education that I'm trying to learn. And I want to salute you and all the work that you have done and are doing. And I want to ask how you and Chuck doing tonight, right? How you and your baby doing? So I wanted to ask this question, right? Being in the revolutionary struggle and different things, how is the weighing the motherhood, the work, and all of that. Can you explain how you do that so successfully?
Santa Sana, I appreciate you asking. We are well, thank you. motherhood. I don't know how I do it myself, right? I think it's a lot of work, right? It's a lot of work. It's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure to do a lot. I mean, like, when I think about it, right, I think about the fact that, you know, as someone who is in resistance, right, I already have a lot of things going against me, right, in society itself, right? Aside from my own perceived issues of repression that I feel like I experience, you know, society itself, right, is not very kind to mothers and women in general, but mothers specifically, as you should know, right? Like, you know, like, this is a struggle in general, like, and, you know, becoming a mother, you know, as someone who struggled, right, in life, becoming a mother, you know, I didn't honestly know what I was doing. But one thing I did know is that everything about this society is already, is, I guess you can say, like, when I had my son, I thought about what it meant to be in resistance when he was in my womb, right? Even at birth, like, the type of birth that I chose to have, like, I chose to be in resistance to everything that exists, because at the end of the day, like, the medical industrial complex, right? There's child welfare system that, you know, puts babies in foster care and steals them from their mothers, right? There's a lot of things that work against us as mothers. And especially if we don't have support, right? I don't have a lot of support, right? I don't have as much support that maybe other people might have, right? It literally is me that has to do everything, right? I have to find a way to make money. I gotta find a way to make sure that he eats every day. I have to make sure that he has food, period. Making sure that he's, you know, happy and healthy, and then find a way to make sure that he's educated, right? And for me to do all that by myself is a struggle. But the one thing that I spoke on earlier is that I come from a lot of struggle and trauma, right? And I never really valued life, to be honest with you. I think, you know, maybe one day I'll go into this, but, you know, I didn't really have a value for my own life. And I didn't have... You know, I didn't even think I was gonna live to 30, right? I just didn't see it at one point in my life, and then I got pregnant and I had my son, and he taught, like, just having him taught me so much more about the world and all of the good and the bad things that I've experienced. And he teaches me to be in resistance, right? To really fully resist, because I know what's here, right? I know what exists, and I know what I'm up against as a mother, because this system is not kind, right? The system is ready, willing, and able to put me in the ground or to incarcerate me, and that's not a joke. That's real. And so how do I do it? I mean, he's the one who pushes me to do it, right? Like, he's the one who gives me that fire inside of me to really put my best self forward every single day and to really put every ounce of myself into this work. Like, there are no days off, right? There's no relaxation, right? Like, this is war, right? Like, if we really understand what is actually happening, what has been happening to our people, and there's no leisure in this life. I don't have leisure, right? I have work and responsibility. And I think that my son really just puts that fire in me to wake up every day, to be on time for life, and to really just be intentional about the work that I do, because I know that my baby is going to be the next generation that's going to put forward the changes that we're working on right now, right? And so as a mother, all the work that I do is going to be transferred into him, and that power is going to be developed into him. And so how I do it, like I said, this is through love, right? Like, this is that's the realest thing I can say is love, not only for my son, not only for myself, but our people as a new African. Like, I've had a deep love for our people, even though sometimes our people, it's tough, right? Like, our people are colonized, right? They got the colonial mentality, right? They out here and they hurting each other, they hurting us, they hurting me all the time, right? But I'm telling you that, like, there's a deep love, right? Regardless of all of that, right? That pushes me forward. I hope that answers your question.
All right. I want to let you know I am very proud to be a cadre, in your cadre. I love you all. I do have another question as well, because, like you said, I totally understand what you're saying when you're doing this by yourself and you're doing this work by yourself. And like I said, I salute you because you're doing a great job. Don't ever, ever forget that. And the importance of the education of our own children. Can you speak on that? Because there's something that's lacking in our community so bad.
Excuse me, you said education of our children, is that correct? The importance of educating our children?
Yes, the education about us taking control of that educational process, because it's too many of our children that are being miseducated, and a lot of us, because like I learned some stuff the other day that I didn't even know. So explain the importance of us educating our own.
Ooh, you know, it's critical, right? Like I said, like my son, he's going to be the next generation. You know, your babies are going to be the next generation, right? And all our babies are going to be, they have to be the next generation, right? To really be critical of what's happening and be critical of their own environment, right? And there's a war on our children. There's a war on families, right? There's a war that really, I mean, that has been damaging us, right, inside and out for so long. When we talk about menticide, nutricide, right, like so much damage has been going into that has been pumped into us, right, has been, you know, I don't really like to use the Willie Lynch, but, you know, if you really read it, like you understand, like it's just this twisted colonial destruction that has happened to our people. And it starts with our children, right? It starts with us as parents, right? Like, what are we doing, right? But our children need to be supplemented, at least supplemented with their education, right? They at least need to be guided, right, to understand what's happening around them. And we need to stop treating our children like they're not capable of understanding this information, right? My son he just turned 5 years old, right? And he doesn't really understand a lot of things, but that doesn't mean I refrain from supplementing his education, because I know that my son goes to school, he's in pre-K, and and there's certain things that he needs that I'm not going to be able to provide him, right? Socialization, like he needs to socialize with other new African kids, period. And so for me, you know, because I'm doing this by myself and I don't really have access to a lot of things, right? there's no alternative school options. There's really not a lot of options for me, right? So I have them in public, which I'm not against. But because I know that that public education is there to damage him, right? Because, again, we are not here for freedom, right? We don't exist because we're free. We exist because we are, because we have conditions, right, around that so-called freedom from the state, you know, and we have to recognize that the education is infecting us. It has infected our people for so long, which is why, you know, we have that intercommunal violence that exists, which is why we have so much, so many of our people who are affected in their own health, right? When we think about, I mean, just alcohol alone, right? Like, I'm not here to judge nobody who drinks alcohol. I drank alcohol my whole adult life, my from childhood. I was drinking alcohol until I'm almost 2 years this year. I'll be 2 years this year I gave up alcohol, right? But just the physical, mental, emotional damage, right? And that stems from the education system. Not only, you know, obviously we know our families have been, you know, there's been a lot of destruction amongst our families, and recognizing all of these issues, right? It's important for us to really supplement that education and really bring about a sense of pride as New Africans, and to really connect. Again, we have to also connect our histories to the continent. Not only just keep our history when we don't even know enough history here, right? But we also have to find ways to connect the history to the continent and help our children, you know that we come from somewhere. Right. That we don't, and my son, you know, unfortunately, you know, I think I have a little bit of a nuance, a little difficulties, because my son, you know, his other side of his family is Dominican, right? And they have a different perspective, right? They have a whole different type of history, even though they are, you know, also African people, right? Mixed, and, you know, obviously we understand, you know, that history of why, you know, people have been mixed. But it really is, like, an interesting, and like I said earlier about what it means to be New African, right? Like, it's not a skin tone, right? It's not about, you know, a race, right? Like, this is, when we talk about nation building, it's not necessarily that. So for me, it's understanding where my child is at and understanding how I could bring these ideas. And it doesn't necessarily have to be hard politics either. It could just be relationships, right? Helping him to have better relationships, so that he grows into to love his people and to understand, you know, why we do this work. And that starts with me, because, you know, me and my son, we have a relationship, and I try to develop that relationship and be accountable to that relationship as much as possible. So I hope that helps to answer the question.
Most definitely, sis, comrade. I can't wait to see y'all on NAMM weekend. That's the end of my questions. Salute as always. Great show. Always, Master Bo Money, continue to stay strong. Free land.
No doubt.
I love you all, and I you.
Likewise, just a comment. Any means necessary.
Okay. Appreciate that. Now we got another caller. 803-577. Your line is open. If you have any question, comment, please, just for the time of announcement. 803-577. Your line is open. Go ahead.
Peace and love. Can you hear me?
Peace and love. Yeah, we hear you. Go ahead.
Respect. Did you say Minister Bomani?
Yes, sir. Minister Bomani. Who are they speaking?
This is Comrade Bomani. That's awesome. I've rarely heard our name, well, my name that close, but that's awesome. Thank you for sharing the action. I didn't catch the sister's name. I didn't catch
my name is
sister's name.
Coco.
Coco. Peace. I am so glad that you are definitely in the business of nation building. Thank you for your work. We need more people to get engaged and more sisters to be promoting the action of nation building. And I'm definitely glad that you are a mother who sees the value in teaching her son about politics and being an example for others to learn about politics, because the situation we are in is because of politics, and it's a must that we educate ourselves about our situation. But I did have a few questions that I had wanted to get your opinion on. First of all, if I could just ask you one quick question about principles. What would you say your principles that you value most and promote most are? I guess your top three principles. What would you say they are? Hello, Sister Coco? I mean, Comrade Coco, are you there?
My apologies. I was on mute. I appreciate your question. So yeah, that definitely a complex question. I appreciate the question. You know, I believe in the community, right? As more important than the individual, right? That's one of my principles, right? That it's not just about me, right? I could go out. I'm a highly skilled individual. I tell you, when I say I could do a lot, I mean, I've learned so many different things. I mean, I could go out and do so much. But what stops me is what I'm doing for myself rather than what I'm doing for my people, right? And what am I doing for the nation? And I think that, you know, that is one thing that really guides me, that really grounds me, is always remembering it's not about me, it's about us. And so I think that is just something that I really do focus on is just making sure that I take myself out, right? I develop myself, right? I make sure that I'm developed, right? Because we have to develop ourselves. We got to heal. We got to get our skills together. We got to do all that stuff, right, as self, because we have to contribute to the community, right? And we have to give to our community wholeheartedly, 100%, as much as we can, because, again, like I said, we ain't got no time. That's one thing we ain't got. We ain't got no time, right? It's a protracted struggle. We've been in struggle for a very long time, right? But shit is crashing. Like, the infrastructure is crumbling. Right? We don't got no time, so we got to remember that it's not about us. It's about the people, collective, community. Have you ever read the New African Creed?
I haven't.
Okay. So, my brother, I would suggest you read the New African Creed. That is, in and of itself, my principles. If that was to sum everything up, those are my principles and my values, right? To build a nation beyond contradiction, right? To, again, the community is more important than the individual, right? These are principles that I have because, again, this is the work. This is the life. This is not just a job, right? This is not something I pick up on my side hustle, right? And to always remain in struggle, you know, beyond all things that come at me, right? To be and to be principled is a reminder of that, right? To go out in public and bash somebody, you know, to keep myself clean in speech, right? To make sure that I'm not gossiping, that I'm not, you know, spread no gossip. You know, these are all the principles that are within the creed, right? And so these are the things that I follow on a daily basis. Now, I'm not perfect, right? I'm not perfect. But at the same time, I recognize the sacrifice and what it's really going to take for us to do the work. And that work is every day. That work is every day.
Yes, it is. Awesome, awesome. That definitely, you hit several nails on the head with that one, sis, especially with the self-development. I definitely concur. That's one of my founding values. Thanks, Dad. My dad always was talking about, you know, you want to make things better, start with yourself. So definitely that's a great value. Now, the other question I have is for both you and Minister Bomani. The business going on in Mississippi about the reinstating of Jim Crow or the new 21st century apartheid that they're striving to institute down there. How do you all feel about that? What are your thoughts on that? And what can we do about that?
And you're specifically, you said Mississippi, or are you specifically talking on Jackson?
Mississippi, but the legislative body of Mississippi is, you know, looking to, I believe the term was, recolonize Jackson, Mississippi.
Indeed.
Which they say is the most melanated city in America, or the most melanated largest city. It has the highest percentage of melanated population in the city, in any major city in America. How do you feel about that? What do you think about that? And what could we do about that?
Okay, well, so Jackson, Mississippi, right, is what we as New Africans call Mega Evansville. And, you know, Jackson, Mississippi is the capital, you know, of the RNA, the Republic of New Africa. And obviously from what you stated, there's a reason for that, right? It's very populated with New Africans. And so, you know, the history of Jackson is a very interesting history. I don't know if you're familiar with, you know, Baba Chokwe Lumumba and his efforts to resist, right, a lot of what you're speaking on, right, of this new era Jim Crow apartheid state, right, that wants to, you know, maintain its power, right, over New African people. And you see the crumbling infrastructure. If you've ever been to Jackson, Mississippi, you see the crumbling infrastructure. You see that there are a lot of abandoned buildings. You see a lot of, you know, of the divestment that has occurred. And then we learn about all the theft, right, that the so-called legislature of Mississippi has continued, you know, to go at war with Jackson, because Jackson has historically had so much progress. When you think about, you know, New Africans winning political power in Jackson, Mississippi, the so-called capital of the state of Mississippi. And then you see Jackson, Mississippi for what it is, right? And you see how angry these Europeans are, right? You see the retaliation that they have because they were not able to fully control New Africans in this city, right? And so there's a large history behind Jackson, right? There's a large history of resistance in Jackson. And they have done nothing but do that work to undermine any progress that they have worked hard for in Jackson, right? And I think that these bills and all of these things, the water crisis, all of these things is just a response, right, to the fact that New Africans have so much political power in that city. Now, this is not to say that Jackson, Mississippi itself right now is a liberated city, right? Because we know what happens when you have new Africans in power that are not establishment new Africans, right? Even if there are contradictions and liberal tendencies, we know that Jackson has been in resistance and has really caused an issue for Europeans, white people in the state of Mississippi. And I think that what's happening today is just a continuation of that war and that struggle, right, to gain power back into those hands of Europeans. And what's really important is one, folks in Jackson have to resist. And however they choose to resist, like, I can't speak on that because I'm not from Jackson. I do not understand the struggle of Jackson, even though I've met people from Jackson or who have struggled in Jackson. But it really is important that, you know, people in Jackson are organizing. And I think that people are doing that work. There's several various organizations and new African organizations who organizers who are, you know, really putting as much effort as possible and as much resources as possible to be in resistance to this war that's been targeted against Jackson itself. And to recolonize, right, to go back and try to appropriate, you know, all that political power back into the hands of the plantation owners and the, you know, European settlers, you know. And so, like, that's, to me, what everyone should be doing is organizing, right? And how we organize, right? That could be a conversation for another day, like what's effective organizing, what is, what works, what doesn't work. And that really is local, you know, decisions that have to be made. But as someone who is a conscious new African citizen worker, you know, I do my best in whatever capacity I can to help support folks in Jackson, because I think that's something that we all should be doing is offering our support and at whatever capacity that we have, because again, they are up against something that I mean, we all are up against a lot, you know, wherever we're at, but there is just some heightened contradictions there that needs to be addressed amongst the, you know, those in resistance to, you know, the power structure that is trying to infiltrate. So I hope that answers your question.
It did, except for the solution. You said it was organizing, and you said that it was a local issue. Do you see the larger connection of human rights being brought into the equation in any areas that you've been engaged in struggle? Has human rights been, like, the ideal that's been promoted?
I'm not too sure.
Having a discussion about human rights, has that been like a focal point for the new Africans?
Well, to answer your question, right, self-determination is a human right, and if we want to just start there, right? I mean, that is what we're speaking to, right? Is the fact that our rights as humans have been violated. Period.
That point.
Right? Just from the theft of our ancestors from the continent of Africa, you know, brought over to, you know, this continent and forced into forced labor, right? And mass destruction and genocide of our people, right? And so that is an issue of human rights. However, and self-determination is something that we have a right to work toward. We have a right to be self-determined people, right? Like, who gets to decide why do people who you know, stole our ancestors and stole our labor and our resources and all of everything, right, from Africa. Why do they get to decide our right to self-determination, right, or right to choose, you know, how we're governed, right? Like, what gives them any type of rights, right? However, you know, and I, you know, like, I will, you know, do my best to engage in, you know, these ideas of what it means to have human rights. And there's, you know, the Durban Declaration that the UN has set. But I will say that sometimes I have some concerns when it comes down to when we speak on human rights, right? And when we work toward human rights, right? Because we can't make these single issue things, right? We can't just be like, you violated our human rights. Like, who's listening to us, right? Like, I mean, we have to be real on that part too, right? Human rights is also a strategy that the United States uses to go in and invade other countries, right? Human rights violations is what they try to state is why they intervene in a lot of things, right? Even locally, even in our own communities, why they so-called have this intervention with police and child welfare and all that stuff, right? They do that so that they protect, right, so-called people. And I think that sometimes that could be a little bit of a problem if we don't find the appropriate language, when we don't find the appropriate ways to resist, when we and think about what it means to, you know, to stand firm as, you know, humans, right, and stand firm that we have certain rights, right, but we shouldn't conflate that with charity and all of these other interventions mm-hmm. that the United States typically tries to engage with and gets messy with because they try to say that they're the leaders of human rights when they are not, you know, and so we have to kind of really think about what it means.
Yeah, they are the leaders of human rights violations. I believe that was the part they left out. But yes, okay, I concur with that in part. The part about
Pardon, sir, brother. We got a few more callers on the line, man.
Respect. So respect. I was about to close. I was about to land. I was about to land with this okay. with this statement.
Okay.
The right of self-determination is the right that gives all people the right to govern themselves, and that is what we can utilize to govern ourselves lawfully. We don't have to run. We don't have to hide. We can stand on the principles of the right of self-determination and govern ourselves where we are. We don't have to go anywhere. The population in any place, as long as the majority can vote to become independent, as long as they have a governing body and can tend to their own business. But we have to organize ourselves on that idea. You know, we've become so engaged in other people's business that we have tended to our own business of building our own nation, which is the horse. We've been looking to put the cart in front of, but now we have to go back and establish a base, a land, a place where we can have our own jurisdictions and build for our future. That's what self-determination allows us to be able to do. And I think Jackson, Mississippi is the perfect place. I think right now, if the people of Jackson decided to withdraw their consent to be a part of the franchise of Mississippi and start their own city, state, nation, state, however you want to put it, I think that would be a solution for the problems that they're facing right now down there. And I'll land there. And you all have a great night. And thank you for allowing me to learn and share. Peace and love.
Okay. Peace and love.
Likewise.
Okay. We have another caller. 901-570. Your line is open. If you got any question, comment, or statement, please do so at the time. 901-570. Go ahead.
Free to land. Can y'all hear me?
Breathe land, yes you can.
My name is Mr. Sterling.
Breathe land, Sister Coco. This is Sister Sama. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. How you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. How are you, Minister Bomani?
I'm strong.
I'm good. I'm enjoying the show. It's phenomenal. I would just like to give Sister Coco her flowers, see, because she's a conscious citizen worker within the Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa who shows up to work. Right, she shows up ever since she's been on the scene. She has been showing up very diligently, and I think a lot of times, you know, we have a lot of these discussions about conscious citizen, about nation building, and have all of these different discussions, right? And sometimes people are critical. Sometimes people have things to add because they're working within their particular areas. But the main thing when we talk about Sister Coco mentioned exhaustion, you know, like reference that in terms of the work, like it's just a lot of work. Yet if folks want to assist in terms of not burning out a few, just show up. That takes off pressure. That takes off when if everybody shows up to play their role and do their part, it spreads the responsibility. You know, this is a collective effort, collective work and responsibility. You know, we always hear the term, this is the people's government. Well, the people have to show up to do the necessary work to build the nation. It won't be as stressful, you know. And then when showing up, show up humble, show up making sure that, okay, we know the condition of our people. We know our historical reality. Let's not come to the table act as if we don't remember. And we want everybody to be perfect. That's not the reality. Yet show up willing to put the work in, internal work and external, you know, that is the struggle, working through the internal contradictions, you know, and that's a daily thing. That's a daily thing. So I was really, really happy that you brought that out. Could you please share with the audience the importance of unit work study and training and what role that plays within building the nation? And I yield back.
Sana, that's such an important question. You know, I said a lot tonight, so forgive me if I repeat things, but, you know, work, study, and training is accountability, right? Period. It's accountability. And when you're in unit and you have your comrades who are accountable and show up, then it's the way we grow, right? It's how we grow, because we learn how to work together. We learn how to study together, right? And that is essentially and training, right? We train together, right? The importance of that, right? Because we have to move together, right? We have to be unified, right? And our movements historically have been destroyed because of several factors, specifically COINTELPRO, right? The state has waged war against our resistance to its infrastructure, to its designation of our people, right? And so because of that, you know, the liberalism, right, that even Mama Safia Bakari talks about, that existed in the Black Panther Party, but it exists everywhere, right? Like we can't forget that. Like liberalism is something that I try to combat within myself, right? What it means to be liberal, even understanding that, like we all have liberal tendencies, and just because we don't have liberal politics doesn't mean we don't do things that are reactionary. And so being in unit and working, study and training helps to bring that unit together so that we all can together come to the table, right, and bring that work and all of the things that we've studied and learned and all of the training that we've engaged in, that we bring it together and we work together toward our goals, right? And to be very specific, right, as a conscious New African citizen, you know, working towards self-determination, right, as a nation, right, as a provisional government, right, everyone has to be working in their respective areas. You have to be, wherever you're at, you have to be doing the work, right? But you can't just stay there doing your work, right? We have to find a way to come together no matter what part of the country you're in, right? No matter where you're at, right? As New Africans, we need to be doing the work locally so that we can come to the table collectively and work through it, right? And when we think about the history of the RNA, the Republic of New Africa, and the history of the provisional government, you know, our ancestors, our elders worked really hard, right, to lay the foundation for us to work and develop and continue. And throughout the way, you know, people have had their own interpretation of what it means to be, like I said earlier, New African, what it means to be a conscious citizen of New Africa, the Republic of New Africa, what it means to be and a conscious citizen worker, right? But to understand why why New Africans declared independence, right? To learn that foundation, to learn the creed, to learn the principles and the values of the nation itself, of what we are working to build, right? To go through those historical documents, to understand what it means for us to build a society that's built on socialism. Right? If we think about it, right, what does that mean, right? What did our elders think of when they were putting this Declaration of Independence together, when they were putting a constitution together, the Code of Moja? But it's not enough for us to just know it exists, but it is important for us to study and to get a very good understanding, a concrete understanding of our histories, of the work that is required, right, to build a nation, right? We're not talking about, you know, a social club, right? It's not a social club, right? It takes work, and it takes for us to really believe, right, that we're actually a nation, right, to move like a nation, right? And all of those technical details and all of that, that accountability is important, and that work study training for me is that accountability so that I can do the work and do the work well, and again, so we can get to where we're trying to go. I hope that answers.
Yes, ma'am. I can. Well, thank you so much. I've enjoyed listening to this. Thank you so much, Sister Coco and Minister.
Shine, for your land.
Okay, the land.
We got one more caller. 901-292. You got any questions, comments, statements, please do so at the time. 901-292. The line is open. Go ahead.
Be the land, Sister Coco and Minister Comrade Bomani. It's Mama Ayo.
I mean, yes, sir.
By any means, Mama Ayo. Good to hear from you.
Yes. Of course. This is a really, really good show. I think that when we, as elders, are looking back so we see who's getting ready to move right along with us to help build the nation, and all of its contradictions and all of the steps that's necessary to rebuild, I want you to talk about the importance of New African family so that New Africans, as part of our growth and development, It's part of us doing the work on ourselves. The sisters, of course, doing some healing work, doing some, you know, as they call it sometimes, just dealing with the traumas, elevating the heart chakra. We're asking our comrade brothers, our kinsmen, to do the same because we are healing. It's the healing of the nation. It's the healing of the ancestral energies that have been embedded in us. So it is very, very important that we do this self-work because we have to rebuild family. We have to come together and be on this land. And the only way that that happens in African culture is you have to come and you have to build family. You have to have your children and your grandchildren, your great-great-grandchildren, and your aunties and your uncles and clans uniting. So please, talk about the importance of New African family.
Santana, for your question. I'll first start with the fact that, you know, what does family mean as an African versus what it means as a European? And I think that we have resisted, right? Because we have our networks of extended family and family that, you know, is really how we continue to thrive, regardless of all of the destruction, right? And unfortunately, part of that infection, right, that the European has given us is this destruction of what we call family, right, and traditional sense of what it means to be family from an African perspective. And so it's really crucial, right, for us to think, and going back to what I said earlier, as a unit, right? Not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily have to be a nuclear family, right? Like, that's not what we're talking about. Again, we're not, that's what the Europeans have introduced to us, right? And shipped away from us from, you know, more traditional forms of family that are African. And so for us, it's about reorienting ourselves, right? Think about what it means to be family, right? And so when I think about New African, when I think about even the provisional government more specifically, you know, I think about my family, right? I think about the work that it's going to take to raise my son and the people that are going to be there to help me to raise my son and to be able to guide my son, not just myself, because we cannot do this alone, right? I can't do this alone. And so, Mama Ayo, like you said, it's important for us, you know, to heal ourselves, right? And to really think about what it means to move past a lot of the trauma and a lot of the issues that have broken our families apart. Right. And when I say that, I mean there's just a lot of issues, right? Like, there's just a lot of issues. I mean, there's a lot of issues because, again, the state has infected us with so many of its values that we have lost our own values. And I think that's to me is another important aspect, right? Is regaining a sense of value for ourselves, right? So that we can build a strong people, and we need people, right? Like, we need to continue to have our people, right? And to have, you know, our children, and to have, you know, all of these things, and to be able to keep our families together, right? Because again, when we think about mass incarceration, right, the destruction alone, right, that has done to New African families, whether it's Are women that are incarcerated or
Parcell, we got less than 5 minutes left for the show. Can you give your final thoughts?
Indeed. So kind of finishing up that point, right? You know, we have to really think about what we value as New African people, and to really think about what it means to overcome a lot of these contradictions that exist in our communities, externally, and within ourselves, right? And doing that work every day, right? And I really want for people to know, right? Like, I mean, I think about nation building. Like, what does that really mean, right? Because there's a lot of resistance to, like, this idea of nation building, right? Some people have been indoctrinated, right? Because, again, COINTELPRO, right, has waged war against nationalism, right? And obviously there's reasons why, right? Because they don't want us to build a nation. They don't want us to determine for ourselves, right, how we live and how we thrive. Instead, as Mama Ayo says, and has other New Africans have said, why are we building someone else's nation? Why are we building someone else's nation? And so I encourage everyone who's listening tonight to really think about what type of skills you have, it could be anything, right? What can you do to contribute? What can you do? What kind of work can you put in? And then start thinking about what it means to be self-governing, right? Like, what does that mean? Because, like people in the United States, African people, new African people, we have been, first of all, disenfranchised, right? Like, we can't, our voting rights and all this voting and participation and, you know, and I'm not saying don't go out and vote. I don't tell people not to vote, although I have my own personal perspectives on it. But that energy that we think that we're changing the system and forming the system and all of that energy can be put into building political power for our people, right? And thinking about that work that is required to do that is going to take a lot of sacrifice, right? And if you really want it, if you really believe in it, you're going to put in that work. You're going to wake up and you're going to put in that work, and you're going to go to sleep putting in that work. And you're probably going to put some of that TV down, right? Because I put that TV, I don't even watch TV, right? I gave up drinking. I don't watch TV, right? I have moments to myself. Point of sale, sister,
like, less than 2 minute phone is going to hang up, right? So you need to get the phone open and hang up, get ready to hang up.
Okay. But I just wanted to thank everyone for their questions tonight, their thoughts. And I really do hope, you know, there's some type of inspiration that that can come from here. And, you know, again, like, this is just work building on more work, building on more work. And the sacrifice that it's going to take is real, but it's possible in our lifetime. It's possible in our lifetime. And I yield.
All right, free land. Again, I want to thank you for coming to the bright shed. Now they want to stand. They go ahead and pad prison in the future. If you get any love, one comment, social behind enemy lines, please look into our website, www.jordanuniversity-gju.com. You also find on social media on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And also that March 31st through April the 2nd, New African Nation is going to take place in Charleston, South Carolina. You can find more on the Regional Public African Radio, all the Regional Public African media sites on social media, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and also on the website, which is www.pg-rna.com. Long the resistance, long live the African independent movement, free the land.